and now the Mediterranean Sea, and the Yemeni army is vowing more and more, and these operations absolutely will continue until the Israeli regime halts its crimes against our people in Gaza and in Lebanon. And people here are expecting the Israeli regime to, you know, act an aggression against the Yemeni people, but they are ready, they're not afraid, they're welcoming that, and they feel that they will be now, or they will be playing the role in supporting the Palestinian people and freeing all the occupied territories in Palestine.
And Abdel-Latif, we've heard in his weekly address quite a few times now, Abdel-Malik al-Houthi, the Ansarullah leader, allude to the fact he strongly feels protecting Palestinians in Gaza and now Lebanese from Israeli atrocities as an Islamic duty, that you cannot sit back as a Muslim in today's day and age, and watch the Israelis kill women and children in Gaza and not stand up for Gazans as a Muslim. He's talked time and again about the disunity and sometimes even use words like shameful, and that it is shameful for certain Arab leaders not to just fail to stand with Gazans and support them in any way they can through operations, but yet they aid and abet the Israeli entity in its onslaught somehow by continuing to deal with it either financially or diplomatically. That he's had a lot of strong words to say about regional countries that have failed to stand up for Palestinians, saying that they feel it's a religious duty. We've heard the same sentiments echoed from Iranian leadership as well, that it is also a pressing Islamic duty upon us to stand for the oppressed in the region, especially Palestinians over the past 12 months.
You know, as we speak here now, today, at this moment, the people in Gaza are now just pulling out the bodies of the martyrs in Ramla. You know, there was a crime a few hours ago, and the same is happening in Beirut. And this has been happening for a year. The Israeli regime has been killing the people in Gaza and now in Lebanon for a year. Thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people, most of them women and their children, have died in these air raids, in this aggression, and nothing, no one did anything for the for these people, these civilian peoples, these innocent women and the children. So the leader of Ansarullah movement, Asad al-Malik al-Houthi, said that all the free people of the world should stand with the Palestinian people, because it's not just a religious matter, it is a humanitarian matter. We saw college students in many countries, in France, in the United States, and other countries protesting on campus for the Palestinian people and demanding their regimes to stop supporting the Israeli regime. This is why it is a matter of morality. So the people of Yemen now feel like it's their responsibility, and the leader of Ansarullah movement has urged them to continue going to the streets, to continue protesting, to continue urging the Yemeni army to do more and more. The Israeli regime is still killing the people of Gaza and the people in southern Lebanon until the moment. So someone has to do something. And you know, Iran, as a major country in the region, has begun now acting against the Israeli regime, against the Israeli crimes. And now it is the role of the U.S. And Britain and any country supporting the Israeli regime. They have to hold back the Israeli regime from continuing escalating its crimes against the people of Gaza and the people in southern Lebanon, and not to do anything, not to escalate the situation, because it is now their rule, it is their responsibility not to trigger a regional war.
Thank you. I'd like to, Abdel-Latif, if you allow me, also get our colleague, Press TV's Robert Inlakesh, in on the conversation out of Edmonton. Hello, Robert. Good to check in with you. Hope you're safe and well doing out there. How have reactions been, Robert, in your neck of the woods toward this latest development, in particular from the top dogs in Ottawa?
Well, of course, condemnation. This has been blanketed across the Western world, that we see that all of them have lined up to offer and pledge their support to Israel, and even claim that Iran's retaliatory attack was targeting civilians, when we all saw the videos. And it's very obvious that the targets were military sites. So we're hearing, you know, a lot of condemnation and a lot of falsehoods, you know, fact-free theories that are put out there about Iran trying to strike civilian targets, which is just not accurate according to the physical evidence. And then the documentary record in terms of what was actually registered as targets, both by the Israelis themselves, what they noted were targets, and what Iran, the IRGC, released as its target list as well. But if you look at the general public and the way they view this, those who are switched onto it, you will have some, of course, that will side with their government's version of events. But many people understand the nature of the Israeli regime. At this point, they understand the lies which are coming out of their corporate media. And they also, if they follow this conflict, understand that, of course, the Israelis carried out an illegal assassination on Iranian soil, and that Iran had every right under the Article 51 of the UN Charter to retaliate, to defend itself, and that Israel doesn't have any right in this case to defend itself under international law. It has no right. Military targets were struck, and the Israelis carried out the initial aggression. So technically, under the law, this is now even. However, Israel is vowing what they call a response and attempting to rally countries like Canada and, of course, the United Kingdom. The United States are beside it as well, and other Western nations, and try to condemn Iran. But interestingly, we know that a United Nations Security Council session has been called for tomorrow. And when this occurs, there will be an attempt, of course, by the Western nations to condemn Iran for its actions. Yet when a similar United Nations Security Council session was called for in the wake of the assassination of Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran, the United States blocked it, and they stated essentially that they stand with the Israelis in that case. So they did nothing. International law, of course, and the United Nations, it was not going to remedy the situation. And Iran, as a country, has the right under Article 51 to retaliate. And it did so against military targets and with precision and without killing Israeli settlers.
And Robert, what portion, or I should say, like, let me better phrase that, how big of a block of the Canadian public still buys Benjamin Netanyahu's narrative that the activities and actions and the onslaught of the regime over the past 12 months is geared toward a campaign of self-defense for Israel, and that the region poses an existential threat to the regime, and somehow it justified? Because we saw world leaders not buying that narrative. We saw them walk out on him last week at the UN General Assembly. But your everyday Canadian, to what degree, and from people that you're in contact with, do they buy Israel's so-called justification to carry out its onslaught in self-defense?
Well, if we're dealing with statistics here, it's actually difficult in the Canadian case to have updated statistics on what they believe and how they would interpret a conflict between Iran and Israel. However, we do know their view roughly on what they believe about Israel's onslaught on the Gaza Strip. The overwhelming majority of people favor a ceasefire. That's across the West, blanket across the West. However, there is a larger portion of the population in Canada, if you compare it to a country like the United Kingdom, where the attitudes towards their government's line on Israel is more favorable. But if you just are to, you know, walk in the street and hear conversations beside you, like I have been doing over the past months, if you're going to go to a restaurant or a cafe and just listen to conversations next to me, I've overheard conversations where people who clearly don't have much knowledge when it comes to the politics of West Asia, but they are outraged by what they've seen on either social media or what they've heard Israel reportedly doing and committing. And of course, now there are large Lebanese communities throughout Canada, and they are under attack as well. And it's not just Palestinians. And so if you take the attitudes which now are very present in the streets all over Canada with demonstrations and student encampments all over the country, it's very clear that those who are politically engaged for the large part are very much opposed to Israel's aggressive actions, and they don't support an escalation of the war. I don't think people anywhere across the West, if you look at any of the polling data, the most recent statistics we had come out, I believe in the last 24 hours, came out from the United Kingdom, and it said 7 out of 10 people in the United Kingdom have unfavorable views of Israel. That's just one example of a recent polling data that just came out. And it's very clear that people do not support an escalation to the war. They want to de-escalate conflict. They're not interested in fighting Israel's battles. In fact, there was significant uproar within Canadian politics, and of course as well from the society, about Canada supplying Israel with arms. And so there were amendments made to the arms supplies being sent over to the Israelis, and that happened many, many months ago now. So it's very clear that in general, people across the West are not normally the most politicized when it comes to what is going on currently in West Asia and what Israel has been committing historically against the Palestinians. But it has become an issue that you can't ignore now. And of those who are witnessing it, and the polls that we see consistently come out in terms of those who are supportive of perhaps Justin Trudeau and those who seek to vote for him, that they are growing more and more anti-Israel because Israel keeps on committing more and more violations of international law, and it doesn't stop. And of course, that combined with the human rights organizations, every single organ of the United Nations condemning Israel on a near daily basis and bringing out report after report after report on its heinous crimes, with the International Court of Justice of course accepting South Africa's case of a plausible genocide in Gaza. These are all things that pile on and make it so that in countries like Canada, the general public are changing their views towards Israel, and they're changing their views towards whether their government should be supporting Israel and encouraging them to expand war.
And Abdul Latif, I'd like to put that same question to you. The anti-Israel operations by the Yemeni armed forces on the high seas, the Red Sea, the Arabian Sea, the Indian Ocean, the Sea of Oman, as far as the Mediterranean, you very well know, the targeting of the ports of occupied Palestine in al-Rashrash, in I believe that's Eilat, and also in Haifa, with drones and missiles. When it comes down to it, to what extent and I shouldn't leave out the hypersonic missile attacks as well. To what extent and how popular are these operations when it comes to your everyday average Yemeni civilian?
If you go to the streets and ask any Yemeni here if he supports the operations of the Yemeni army against the Israeli-linked ships, the American-linked ships, and the British-linked ships, whether in the Red Sea or any part of the world, absolutely, they will tell you that they support them. They feel proud that the Yemeni army is doing that. And you know, the Yemeni army has made a miracle by using ballistic missiles in such attacks. They are targeting moving targets in the sea with ballistic missiles, which is probably used for, should be used for, you know, targeting military sites or any target on the ground. So the Yemeni army is doing very well in this. The Yemeni people are urging the Yemeni army to do more and more. The Yemeni army vowed to continue attacking the Israeli maritime navigation. They vowed to target the American and the British interests in the region. The Yemeni army has also vowed to use new weapons in the upcoming days, and also they have vowed to, you know, to be engaged in the ground battle. And I believe that they have sent fighters to maybe southern Lebanon, maybe to Gaza. No one knows, but you know, the Minister of Defense here, Major General Mohammed Al-Atafi, said that they have prepared for that and they have maybe done some of that. So the Yemeni army is absolutely supporting the Palestinian cause and the Lebanese people, and the Yemeni army is gaining its support from the Yemeni people, who are urging, supporting and backing the Yemeni military actions against the Israeli linked ships and also against the occupied territories in Palestine.
And Robert, right now there are a lot of people conjecturing what the regime, the Zionist entity, has been after for all these months leading us up to today, where we're at with Iran carrying out these retaliatory missile operations all across Tel Aviv, using hundreds of much more sophisticated than the April attack. So everything leads and looks like we're only going towards more escalation. And now the kind of rhetoric we're hearing from the Israeli regime, they're saying they're going to give a strong response to this, and the U.S. is obviously backing them. And a lot of people feel this is playing exactly into Israel's playbook that has been looking for regional escalation and possible all-out war for quite some time, and to try to drag Washington into the middle of it and have Washington face off with Iran for the regime. Now, if that is the case, to what end? If the regime has been attacking and giving up multiple opportunities for a Gaza ceasefire to push for more escalation, it's in Lebanon now to push for more escalation, as now Antonio Guterres with the UN has basically been pushing for two ceasefires, one in Gaza now and one in Lebanon, and he's not anywhere even close to having the Israeli entertain either one. Your thoughts on what objective possibly the regime is pushing for when it is what a lot of analysts feel, Robert, is pushing for regional escalation and all-out war? To what end? How would the regime benefit from turning the region upside down in a lot alike to what it's done, and much like what it's done in Gaza?
Well, there's two angles that we have to look at this from. The first is that Iran evidently, time and time again, has shown restraint. Iran now, with its new government, has been attempting to reach out to and repair ties where possible with the Europeans and even other Western nations. It is trying to de-escalate. It is trying to get a ceasefire in Gaza. And it has been, even with the government of Ibrahim Raisi, was trying to do the same thing. However, the Israelis now, and they've been on this trajectory for some time, are facing what can be called an existential threat to their existence as we know it. Economically, they have been significantly damaged. Their public relations, the view of them publicly in the international community, from the world, the general public, will never be repaired. Their image will never be repaired. They are now on trial for genocide. Their leaders are awaiting international criminal court, war crimes charges. And there are arrest warrants that we are waiting now for Benjamin Netanyahu and his war minister, Yoav Gallant. The Israeli society is completely shaken, and Israel has been exhausted militarily. If you are to look at Israel and its military affairs inside of the Gaza Strip, we saw that it went first into Gaza City, it went into Al-Shifa Hospital, it made that, you know, its big thing that it was going to uncover the so-called Hamas headquarters. Of course, it did not. And then it went after that, there was a brief pause, and they decided after that to go to Khan Yunis, where the Israelis then stated that that's the real Hamas HQ. They're actually based in Khan Yunis, all while blowing these places to pieces. But then they waited for 5 months to invade Rafah. And the reason for that is because Israel needed time to prepare. Israel knew that going into Rafah would not defeat Hamas or any of the Palestinian resistance groups. It would just kill more Palestinians and displace more Palestinians. But it needed more time. And it needed more time because it knew that after Rafah, it can't end the conflict there. It's not possible. They will come out with a massive strategic loss. Hezbollah was still firing at the north, what had still displaced their settlers. Of course, Iran looked extremely strong in the region. Ansarullah looked extremely strong in the region. The Axis powers, they looked very, very strong. Israel looked weak. Its air defense capabilities were being undermined. Its military capabilities, its intelligence capabilities, its economy, its international image, all of this undermined. And with it, the United States and its global ambitions, but specifically in West Asia. So the Israelis knew they had to escalate and they had to take this fight then on to the next biggest player, which was Hezbollah. And they knew that in order to get out of this conflict, they needed to escalate. Their back is against a wall, and they are now coming out swinging with everything that they have in the most dirty ways possible, and they will continue to carry out more assassinations. They will continue to bomb more Arab capitals. I have no doubt that they will continue to try and carry out what actions they can against the Islamic Republic of Iran. They will try to undermine Iran. They will try their best to cause any sort of civil unrest, to carry out assassinations, and to ultimately undermine Iran, its position in the region, its economy, its infrastructure, the same as it's doing now with Lebanon by trying to undermine Hezbollah. That is what it's doing, and it has no other options in front of it. That's why it's behaving in this way. Unfortunately, at this point, Israel cannot be stopped except for a conflict. It does seek some sort of conflict, but it wants limited escalations and limited conflicts. And so what Iran has just done today, for instance, is showing the Israelis that if you are going to continue this action, that there will be consequences to it. The Israelis were going to carry out more operations. They were going to continue to attack regardless, and they will still continue to attack and agitate. The United States is not in a position to fight a regional war, but of course the United States being involved is very deadly. It will be very costly. But the Israelis, again, they're significantly threatened. Their position has been threatened, and they were not going to wait around and allow for a long war of attrition to essentially bleed them to death. So they lashed out in the most brutal ways possible, the most provocative ways possible, violating sovereignty after sovereignty of different nations surrounding them. And they have turned into a complete lunatic regime, which is backed by the United States. If you want to look at the United States just briefly going into this and the way that it used to deal with Israel, the United States used to have some red lines, some sort of restrictions that it placed on Israel. Even when Sheikh Ahmed Yassin was assassinated during the era of George Bush Jr., George Bush condemned Israel. 16 civilians were killed, I believe, when they assassinated Sheikh Ahmed Yassin, the founder of Hamas in the Gaza Strip. 16 civilians were killed. Today, the United States is celebrating the assassination of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. After they dropped 85 tons of explosives in southern Beirut and pulverized six residential buildings. We see as well, back before in 1982, the Reagan administration condemned at the United Nations Security Council the Israeli invasion of Lebanon. Today, the Biden administration and Kamala Harris are celebrating it and backing it. It is a very different world. There are not rules, unfortunately. The United States is not restraining Israel, unfortunately. And despite the best efforts of most nations in the region that do not want to see this escalate into a regional conflagration, Israel is dragging it there. But unfortunately, it seems as if there is no way that this can be prevented except through a mutual escalation, hoping that Israel will back off at some point and realize that if it goes too far, it will lead to its destruction.
Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us. Robert and Lakesh joining us out of Edmonton, and also Abdul Latif Al-Washali, both Press TV correspondents. Al-Washali is joining us out of the Yemeni capital of Sana'a. For viewers, Iran says it has fired dozens of ballistic missiles at key military and security targets in Israel in response to deadly attacks on Gaza and Lebanon, as well as the martyrdom of senior Hamas, Hezbollah, and IRGC leaders. Israel says a large number of those missiles were intercepted, but we've been bringing images throughout the night here showing barely any, at least from eyewitness accounts and from footage that has trickled into here to our Press TV studios. Seems like, to the IRGC's point, over 90%, in fact, of missiles seem to have penetrated Israel's so-called Iron Dome missile defense system, and they did hit targets there in Tel Aviv. Israeli officials have vowed a response now, but Iran has warned Israel will face a, quote, crushing, end quote, attacks if it does so. And earlier, Israel said that its troops, this is before the retaliatory strikes by Iran, that its troops had entered the southern Lebanon for what it called a limited raid, but that was denied by Hezbollah, that the regime has crossed over into Lebanese territory. We're going to take a short 10 to 12 minute break now, but we're going to come back with this rolling coverage here on Press TV, so stay tuned and goodbye for now.
I hereby declare that the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps and the armed forces of the Islamic Republic of Iran are fully prepared, both defensively and offensively, to respond with much greater intensity to any repeated aggression. If the Zionist regime, which has gone mad, is not restrained by the U.S. and Europe and continues its crimes or acts against our sovereignty and territorial integrity, an operation many times larger than tonight's will be carried out, and all their infrastructure will be struck. We hope that the U.S. will abandon its past approach and stop this criminal regime so that peace can be restored in the region.
With the permission of Almighty God, in revenge for the blood of the martyr and the warrior Ismail Haniyeh, as well as the blood of the commanders and the great leader of Hezbollah, the great fighter Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, and the brave commander of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, General Abbas Nid Furushan, and also in revenge for the blood of the innocent children of Gaza and the oppressed and resilient people of Lebanon, we are launching Operation Two Promise the Second.
Set world free. Strike us down, we rise once more. Our banner flies from shore to shore. In every heart, in every core, your reign will crumble, never soar. The blood we spill, the tears we shed. Ignite the path ahead for every martyr, every dead. The cries of justice shall be led. You've forgotten the man he swore, the Baker Yahusein forevermore. The path of truth, an endless shore for those who stand and fight this war. The soul of Hassan will never fade. Your terror reign, a fleeting blade. For in his name we're unafraid. In death, a thousand wars.
And now welcome back, everyone, to our rolling coverage here with respect to Iran saying now it has fired dozens of ballistic missiles through the night at key military and security targets in Israel, mostly the city of Tel Aviv, in response to deadly attacks on Gaza and Lebanon, as well as the martyrdom of senior Hamas, Hezbollah, and IRGC leaders. Israel says a large number of those missiles were intercepted, but we have seen through the night images from Tel Aviv refuting that Israeli claim, as we've seen dozens upon dozens of ballistic missiles hitting targets in Tel Aviv. Israeli officials have vowed a response, but Iran has warned Israel will face a crushing response if it dares attack the Islamic Republic. And this is all taking place in the backdrop of Israel's aggression against Lebanon over the past 8 days that's resulted in well over 1,000 Lebanese fatalities, including women and children. And we've also been keeping you abreast throughout the last year now on Israel's genocidal campaign in Gaza, which has now resulted in the deaths of nearly 42,000 Gazans, including mostly, I should say, women, children, and everyday civilians, nearly 100,000 Gazans injured, and also at least 700 killed in the occupied West Bank. Palestinians, including young teenage boys and girls, over 10,000 arrested, over 7,000 injured since October the 7th. And in response, Iran has fired a barrage of ballistic missiles, including hypersonic missiles, according to the IRGC, hitting targets, three in particular military targets in Tel Aviv. Joining us now is Ramzi Barood, author and journalist out of Seattle, Washington. Dr. Barood, welcome to the conversation here in our rolling coverage. Your thoughts on Iran's very strategically delayed but yet nevertheless imminent response to Israeli aggression in the region with last night's barrage of missile attacks at against Tel Aviv.
There's definitely a collective sighing in the Arab world at this point. I mean, in the Muslim world, throughout the world, there was a lot of fear that if an Iranian response does not come to press the reset button on all of this and to restore deterrence, then Netanyahu would continue with his victory lap, where he's basically has been for about 10 days now celebrating what felt to many Israelis as the beginning of victory after a whole year of setbacks, outright defeats, humiliations, undermining their most celebrated elements of power, the intelligence, then the military, then the strategic losses that were happening at a regional and a global level. Normalization has been marginalized, if not completely removed from any discussion. regarding Israel and Israel's relationship with the Middle East and so forth. Now, Netanyahu, for a while, until the minute that this attack started, and I'm not talking here as a military expert, I am talking from a strategic point of view. 1 minute before the attack started, Israel felt that it was about to return to the path of victories. In fact, the expansion of the government of Benjamin Netanyahu, the joining of Gideon Saar, the fact that those who stood in opposition of Netanyahu for such a long time, you know, Lapid, Gantz, and others, are now pretty much, you know, on his side as far as the war on Lebanon is concerned, because Israelis love to feel victorious. They love that kind of triumph, and they quickly forget about all of their woes and all of their problems and all of their divisions, because everybody is going to be pushing everybody else out of the way to claim some kind of victory, all in anticipation of the next elections, whenever these elections are going to happen. So it really did seem that there was something fundamental that has changed in the relationship between Israel and the axis of resistance, something that Israel could not achieve for a whole year. Then this happened. And now Israel, of course, is denying that it hit strategic areas and most of them were intercepted. Netanyahu declared that this was a failed attack. What failed attack? We all watched it. Children in the Gaza displacement camps were dancing and chanting and clapping as they were seeing the missiles falling on Tel Aviv. So the question is, why is Israel denying this? Why did the Pentagon declare that this operation or this Iranian attack was thwarted? I mean, we know it wasn't thwarted. We know it hit its targets. So why are they saying the opposite? Because they do not want to escalate. Because they know that Iran has showed a degree of audacity, of boldness, of bravery, if you will, which means that Iran is ready for more escalation, shall Israel decide not to be deterred and not to find a way out of the mess that it created for itself in Gaza, in Lebanon, and elsewhere. One last thing I'd like to say regarding your point. I just feel like the language that was used, the political discourse emanating from Tehran tonight, was very, very important. Because what they said this was a retaliation for the assassination of Palestinian leader Ismail Haniyeh. Check. But they also said it's a retaliation for the assassination of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, which means that what the Iranians are now saying, that this is not just about Iranian territories. It's not about its Iranian sovereignty and the integrity of the Iranian physical and political and strategic spaces. It is also about Lebanon. So this is very, very important, and I am sure that the discourse analysts within the Israeli government are now studying these statements very well, knowing that Iran has declared that what happens in Lebanon is also its business, the same way that what is happening in Palestine is also its business. This is extremely, extremely strong response from Iran. I know many are going to try to undermine it, including some in our region, unfortunately, but it's not going to change the fact. History was indeed made today.
And Dr. Baroud, you mentioned the rhetoric, the characterization of Iran's operation reminiscent of language toward the promotion of de-escalation, or at least a stop to an escalation. But where has U.S. leadership been for the last few weeks as the regime has pushed for nothing but escalation in the region, giving up ample opportunities at a ceasefire to put an end to the onslaught against Palestinians in Gaza and the occupied West Bank, choosing instead more death, destruction, and expansion of escalations into Lebanon, Doctor?
Assume that the U.S. and Israel are two separate entities with two separate sets of interests. They are essentially the same entity, and they behave according to the same agenda, and largely they have similar strategic goals. Israel needs the United States in order for it to function. Israel is like a bully that needs a bigger bully to protect him. the United States serves as the insurance company that tells Israel, do whatever you want, and we are going to here to cover the damage, right? For the United States, Israel is also critical, because Israel is the, you know, the flexed muscle of the United States in the region. Without Israel, American plans, American hegemony, American political intrigues will not prevail. I mean, if the United States would lose to other big competitors, namely China and Russia and Iran as a regional power. So they need each other. The difference between both of these entities is that Israel is leading a more extremist version of existing American foreign policies. Israel wants to see a kind of a hastened American strategy being implemented in the region, total hegemony, forcing the normalizations on the Arabs. I mean, if you watch Netanyahu's last speech at the United Nations General Assembly, he wasn't saying we extend our hands and friendships to our Arab, you know, potential Arab allies. No, no, he is saying that they will. It's an imposition. Imagine someone is there to threaten imposition of normalization, diplomatic ties. It's either that or what happened to those, you know, pesky Iranians and Lebanese and Palestinians is going to happen to you. It was a language of a bully. But on the other hand, the United States does not want to see total escalation that is going to lead to a total war that it does not want to fight. It is unable to rein in Israel, but at the same time, it is unable to retreat entirely from the scene because it also stands to lose if it does so. So it's being dragged by Netanyahu in every possible direction, fighting wars they don't want to fight. And that's the pathetic language coming from the Pentagon today, that we thwarted the operation. You didn't thwart anything. You are just worried, or you are scared if you would say, no, the operation was a success. It means that you have to do something about it as the United States to restore your power in the region. And there's very little, at least not at this stage, that the United States can do.
And Dr. Baroud, all this talk about a supposed ongoing fallout between U.S. President Joe Biden and Benjamin Netanyahu, that the U.S. wanted a Gaza ceasefire. Netanyahu came up with new conditions in the last minute. The U.S. supposedly, Joe Biden, wanted no land invasion back in late October of Gaza. It wanted to see no attack on the southern city of Rafah. It wanted to see more of a preservation of civilian lives in Gaza, wishes it never got from Israeli leadership. It wanted to see no attack, supposedly, on Lebanon, and it didn't want to see Israeli boots coming into Lebanon. It wanted supposedly immediate de-escalation. Are these basically, because a lot of people say it's election season in the U.S., so you might see a lot of this kind of rhetoric that it's not sincere. To your from your perspective, are these fractures and divides between U.S. leadership and Israeli leadership genuine, or is it all just political theatrics?
Well, if they are genuine, they would essentially be as genuine as the frictions that exist within the Israeli government itself, between the oppositions, between the extremists, between the nationalists, the ultra-nationalists, the right and the center. So it is kind of, you know, if that conflict exists in real life, it's a conflict within the same system, the same matrix. But on the other hand, there's a lot of deception involved in this. I mean, just think about this. I mean, who would believe that the United States would assassinate Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, knowing that this could lead to a regional war that is going to embroil the United States and potentially others? And yet the United States does not know about it, because this is what they said. We did not know about it. We had no idea that they were going to assassinate Nasrallah or Haniya or anybody. Of course, it's a lie. It's a lie because, number one, we know that the weapons and the bunker busters that have been dropped are U.S. supplied. The U.S. wouldn't, Israel wouldn't use American weapons with such massive weight and strategic value without letting the Americans know first. The second is that we know, and October 7 have proved this. In fact, the whole last year have proved that Israeli intelligence in many ways is extremely faulty and is incapable of handling many of the simplest tasks. Until now, Israel continues to behave in Gaza, looking at this empty space. They have no idea what they are doing. for a whole year. Now, why would we believe that suddenly all of this string of assassinations, including that of Sheikh Nasrallah himself, were done without any American involvement? This is the work of top Western intelligences, satellite information, all sorts of spying software and hardware that have been provided by someone else. The Israelis are simply incapable of doing so. Now, on their own. Now, that takes me back to your original question. You know, is this theatrics? Of course it's theatrics. They say, I mean, I can believe that there might be a disagreement in which the Americans were eventually forced to see things the Israeli way, or were manipulated by Netanyahu, or were worried about the consequences of this to the elections of Kamala Harris or whomever. But not to the extent that you do this every single day. From Politico to Axios, New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, CNN, everybody, every day. Biden is not very happy with what Israel is doing, yet he gives them more money. The American administration of Biden has told Israel, enough is enough, but yet they give them more bunker busters. We can't be so naive as to believe that a whole year of that set of behaviors makes the U.S. in any way innocent or outsider to all of this. And the Americans are part of this war on the Palestinians. They have participated effectively in practical ways in the war against the Palestinians, and their hands are as bloodied by the genocide in Gaza as the Israeli hands. In fact, if it were not for American support, Israel would have run out of ammunition.